Are you ready, Kelly?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go ahead and call to order for a regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting Tuesday, March 22nd, if the audience is on the board. The Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. We'll start with public comment. Number one, this comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. See anybody move towards the mic? Agency reports, Access, Annual Report, Andrew Schreck. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Angie.
Hello. You guys have a couple of pages in front of you, which mostly, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, which mostly covers everything that I'm going to talk about. I may add a couple points here and there. Okay. So we are kind of past the halfway point in this fiscal year of using your allocation of just over $53,000. And as of our January billing, we've used 92% of it. So we are doing good, I guess, in utilizing those funds, and it shows that the demand continues to be high for the variety of our services that we provide to Story County residents. Decided to give you some highlights on some projects that we have been working on, some for some time, some are newer. Last year, in fiscal year 2015, the Story County Sexual Assault Response Team had the highest number of responses since their beginning in 1997. So they had 70 responses. Those are adult cases or teen and above cases. That doesn't count the child cases that were a part of response as well. The average, I think, is more around 55 to 60. So we definitely had a spike.
Angie, help me with this. So in your view, and I know this is anecdotal, but in your view, are these assault cases really up, or is the reporting of them up?
In my view, the reporting is up, so it's a good thing.
Okay, that's what that
is. Yeah, our goal is always to make sure that people understand that they can come to us no matter what they think the outcome might be, no matter whether they're ready to go fully forward with the criminal process, and when we see increased reporting, we hope that we decrease those barriers. It's a good thing. It's not necessarily less work, though, and so that's, you know, something that we have to consider. One thing that we've done in response to that is that when we had the transition 3 years ago and we had the siloing of our programs, we established separate on-call systems between our programs, domestic abuse, sexual assault. What we've done now is we've combined some of our responders so that we have a larger pool of responders in this area so that we don't have one team getting burnt out on call-outs at night versus another team having busier days. So that's something that we just established January 1st, and we've done a lot of cross-training and a lot of conversations before jumping into that, because we've had some people who were just hired for domestic violence or just hired for sexual assault. So we had to kind of undo some of that siloing that happened with us and make sure that people were really prepared. I think it's a great thing. I think that we have to have people that are informed and ready to assist with any type of crime and any kind of trauma. And so cross-training and just being available for any type of response has, I think, will work out really well for us. Our DART team continues to be a significant success. DART is different than START. The R stands for review rather than response. It is not about calling everybody together on the scene, because the scene of a domestic violence is very different than the scene or the initial report of sexual assault. But we are very committed to coming together on a very regular basis and reviewing these cases. I have seen so much benefit from this. Our prosecutor here in Story County that handles most of the domestics, Crystal Rink, is excellent, but domestic violence cases don't have a high success rate. In other words, you don't get a ton of successful prosecutions. But she's able to talk with the team and make sure that she thinks that all the resources are pulled together for as successful a prosecution as possible. But the primary role is to make sure that the victim is getting all of their needs met. So we are at that table every review meeting, making sure that we're finding the right way to reach out to that victim. Because if they fall off of the radar of the criminal justice system, we want to make sure that they still have the opportunity to stay involved with our services. I'll try to speed up. The Central Iowa Services Network Against Human Trafficking has been a strong presence here in the last couple of years. It's headed up by YSS, and we've been at the table and trying to increase our presence on a regular basis. One new initiative that we are going to be working on is called data mining. That is a system where you train volunteers to monitor certain sites that have, unfortunately, advertisements for people that might be available for prostitution. And so our volunteers have been trained specifically by a program called Breaking Traffic out of Eastern Iowa to do that monitoring. Our goal in that monitoring is not to do immediate responses, although we are aware that there will be times where we have to notify law enforcement immediately, but it's really to monitor the trends and to provide that information to law enforcement. This is not considered one of our usual confidential services. We're not gathering this information just to keep it to ourselves. We are gathering it because we have volunteers as resources when maybe law enforcement doesn't, and we have the ability to provide some of that oversight and some of that trauma, trauma-informed management of those volunteers, because it's a highly intensive process to monitor those pages. The Youth Poetry Slam is one of our newer projects. We are really excited about this. We have a youth advocate. We have two youth advocates, but one of which has been very involved in this process. Once a month, we have a youth poetry slam at the East Public Library. And just in the four, maybe five sessions that we've held, our attendance has spiked to 50 or more participants. We're targeting youth that are at risk to attend, so we're reaching out to some of the houses of YSS, some of the other youth groups that we're aware of, or some of the school counselors that we know might be able to connect a youth to that event. It's kind of a backdoor way to connect with youth. You know, they may not say that they are willing to come to counseling sessions, but they may be willing to come to this type of event. So we're excited to be offering it. Last but certainly not least, our new housing model is coming together. And that's something that we've been talking with various groups about for the last 6 months. We presented it to the asset admin team in November. What it entails, and you have a letter that explains it pretty thoroughly, and then you have a few bullets on your report page, it involves decentralizing our housing services. Instead of having most of our housing investment in one large shelter, it will be scattered site sheltering. It will be 2 to 3 locations, smaller locations, one which will continue to be supervised for security reasons and sometimes for just kind of the treatment and care of the residents, and then 2 which will be independent living. We are adding that to a transitional housing grant that we received in the fall, which also increases our bed capacity and the diversity of our housing in Story County. We will have 4 apartments or 4 units in Story County for transitional housing, which is 6 to 24 months. So it does 2 things. First of all, the folks who really need that, the more long-term chance to work on the barriers that they have to housing, they have that. They don't have to worry about where they're going to go in 3 months. They can stay the full 24 months if they have to. What we anticipate that it will also do is it will decrease the number of repeat stays that we have in our emergency or short-term sheltering services, because a lot of times people will come through our system as well as other homeless systems over and over again until they find that stability. And so we're hoping to bring that stability to them sooner. And then we're also increasing our rapid rehousing program, which is a HUD program, and that is financial assistance for folks who can find their own place. If they can look good enough on paper to get a landlord to say yes, if they can have a plan to get their resources together in a short period of time, we can take care of that first month, 2 or even 3 months to make sure that they have that, leg up on that housing facility.
So, Annie, you sold the building.
We sold the building.
You're in it through August.
Through August 1st.
And so I get, let's see, how do I say it? I get the sales pitch of this is innovative and exciting and everything else. The first thing it does is it raises a yellow flag for me of concern. Are we really going to be able to continue to meet the needs? So this board was absolutely committed to the traditional method that we were going through. Just talk it through for me one more time. You really believe this is a better system, or was it financially related making these moves?
It was not financially related. I mean, we are going to hope that we get the financial part to follow the move.
Okay.
I do believe that it's a better model.
Okay.
We do not need to supervise every single victim that needs housing. We do not need to give them that message that they require supervision. And so having one location that's supervised for fewer people, I think, is a better message to victims. We also had a model that we tried in Marshalltown first to kind of see how this went, and it has gone amazingly well. We have had an apartment there for 6 months now where we place people independently, completely on their own as far as the day-to-day living, but we provide them with support services. And our turnaround there has been 2 to 3 weeks that somebody gets into permanent housing, whereas sometimes in shelter,
okay,
it's much longer because of some of the barriers that are just involved with being in a large shelter facility. Housing First is a research based model where you can get somebody into housing and then, you know, see what supports are needed long term. And so we're not doing this based on a gut feeling or a desire to just not manage a large shelter. We're doing it based on what we believe is the best practice out there.
Super. Thank you.
The legislature was talking a little bit this year. There was some particulars for trash. Are you familiar with where they are in that process right now? I know there was some question about identifying other people in the home who might would be covered, which was a change from the original proposal. What is your take on not necessarily the value of it, but what are you hearing and what are you seeing as the likelihood that that will actually take place this year, or is that something that's probably going to still need to be worked on the next legislative session?
Well, I wish that I was as up to date on this as I should be. The only thing that I have followed very closely with that is some of the mandatory training pieces on trafficking, that when you're doing the mandatory child abuse, that you include trafficking in there. And I think that there was some opposition to that because people didn't understand that it was, they thought it was an unfunded mandate. But it, in reality, it isn't, because mandatory training or mandatory child abuse training already occurs. It's just a change in the curriculum. So that's the piece that I have followed. I also know that there's been some attempts to increase protections for youth who are identified, unfortunately, for the criminal behavior that is kind of most obvious with trafficking, prostitution, or drug use, and having protections for them to be under the child in need of assistance protections. And I think that that went into effect last year. So I'm not sure where the specific piece that you're talking about falls into that. But yeah, the state of Iowa is definitely paying attention to trafficking, and I think that what is needed now is better identification. We believe it's out there, but we don't have the proof that it's out there, and we're not necessarily connecting to those victims to give them the resources they need.
Angie, we were $53,000 last year. Clearly, you guys are going to be able to utilize all of those dollars this year. How do we do for next year? Remind me what we end up.
It might just be like a 2 to 3% increase. I think we were pretty conservative. Because the new housing model will unfold in next fiscal year, we didn't ask for a lot more. We kind of just wanted to stay at status quo and see how the dollars worked out.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Thank you
for your work.
Next is Keith Morgan, Emergency Management, quarterly report.
Keith, what's going on today?
Staying busy, sir.
The right answer.
Bad weather is not a business, right?
He's got all the military answers always.
We are right on the borderline on some of it, but if there's severe weather, it's most likely going to be to the south. I understand you've got a full agenda today, so I'll synopsize some of the stuff that I presented to you. Talking about our responses, that should be fine. we had to close I-35 again this year, imagine that. One of the things that we did that was good about this, if there's anything good about it, is our after-action report looked at it, and this was probably one of the more difficult times because it happened right in the afternoon when we have the most traffic on the interstate and also people are trying to get home. We went back through the Ames Visitors and Convention Bureau and pulled our hotels and motels here to see how many more rooms did you actually have to occupy during this time frame. We found out it was about 125. Now, what's critical about that is we now have a pretty much a worst-case situation, so that if we are approaching one of these situations where we're likely to close I-35, we partner with Ames Visitors and Convention Bureau, just like we did this time, to say, how many rooms have you got available? And if we start bumping up against 125 rooms, that's when we need to start putting some of our other agencies on notice that we may need to open up sheltering. So productive out of it. The overall activation of the plan went very, very well, and we took care of the needs of everybody that was traveling at that time.
A quick thought before you move on from there. I know you're trying to synopsize and be quick. So DOT has in the plan to close down access to Ames on from I-35 north on the 30 as they build the new overpass. And as I understand it, the redirection of traffic is going to be to 13th Street. And just as I was thinking about the possibility of having to close the interstate during, I assume it's going to be more than one construction season that it's going to take them to build this new flyover, have we looked at all at how that will impact our plans if we're closing down 35? Because right now we close it right there at Highway 30. We just may need to be thinking through what happens if you can't exit right there.
Exactly, and we have not looked at that yet. What we do is we revisit this plan every October. So each winter, as we get closer to that, that will be one of the things. If there's temporary detours that we have to put in to drive them down 13th, down Dayton, back to where we have them going, we thought this through so that we push them off and over to where most of our hotel rooms are. So now we may have to change where we put some of our signs, so it would be up there to pull them down Dayton to those hotels. So in October, as we do every year, when we run this drill, we might have to change that up. On March 13th, there was a fire of a semi-trailer that was parked. The driver was sleeping. It was in the parking lot of the Winfield facility up there by Ames. It did contain hazmat. The quick reaction of the Story City Fire Department put the fire out, but that was one of those potential situations that we were monitoring. We've been working with the schools here and throughout Story County to try and get their emergency operations plans more refined. We had a meeting on February 1st, and Ames, Ballard, Gilbert, and Nevada schools did attend. The way we're doing this is I'm going through the template that's been provided by the state, and I'm going and I put in a lot of recommendations in there. We get together in the meeting, share best practices, then send the schools back out so that they can customize these inputs to each of their own school districts. It's a multi-stage process because there's a lot of work that has to go into these. Our next one is coming up on March 28th, where we'll bring them together and we're going to look at specific functions within the overall plan. On January 5th, I attended a meeting that was about interoperable communications, and it was sparked by a high-speed pursuit that went across multiple jurisdictions down in the Jasper County and Polk County area. One of the key issues that came out of that is incorporation of these nationwide interoperable frequencies, plus the mixed systems, the metro interoperable communication systems down in Des Moines, to be able to better communicate. I took some of the lessons learned from that, got a meeting going here. Unfortunately, it wasn't as well attended as I would have liked to. I understand, though, with the volunteer departments, it's tough to get people to come to them. But we're going to continue our efforts to push for the integration of these frequencies. It does cost money to reprogram your radios for it, but by reprogramming radios, it greatly enhances our capability to call upon resources that are outside and also to increase safety during multi-jurisdictional and multidisciplinary responses. The other thing that we've been doing is there's what's called the Region 1 Regional Interoperable Committee, which is looking at both the rollout of the 700 megahertz statewide radio system and also FirstNet, which is broadband for public safety entities. I'm participating in those meetings so that we can also be looking forward to what we're going to need in the future to be able to be interoperable. During my last update, I talked to you about our emergency medical response study that our agency is doing at the direction of the Emergency Management Commission. We began with a meeting where the three dispatch agencies came together and we discussed what kind of information they have in their call logs. We have started an initial study of this, and we just took one chunk of information, which was the number of times the Story County Medical has to respond outside of their area. Working closely with Matt Boyk in your GIS section, we pulled this information in, and we were able to produce two charts that are sort of our test run on this information. What this graph shows is the emergency medical responses by Story County Medical outside of their area. You can see that it is for each individual day, and it's during the daylight hours. It's over a three-year period, so that represents essentially about 152 days during this period. You can see that there's not much difference, really, as we walk across the week during the daytime. But when you move to the nighttime, you can see that there is considerable difference. We go from a total of 39 responses on a Sunday outside of their area, but during the weekday, it drops down to 14 to 20. Now, more than what this information is presenting to you, I think what's important is it demonstrates how doing this data mining can be helpful to us. Because by looking at this, the first thing that we're going to do is go back and verify that we have good, correct data that generated this. But after that, you can look at this information in a couple of ways. First off, is there anything that we need to do to shift some of our capability between these weekdays and the weekends? Is there a way that we can do that? The other thing that what this might demonstrate is there any way we can drive down demand on the weeknights? By doing this, we can find ways to make our system more efficient and more effective so that we better utilize the resources that we have. And by looking at it, we also look to the future.
Explain what you mean about driving down demand on weekends when we're talking about emergency response. Emergency response, to me, is when the emergency arises. And weekends, you tend not to have as fully a staff. Maybe as you might need to have, and maybe you're having to reach out to people from farther away to come in. I don't know. Just talk me through that. What do you mean?
And part of that, you might possibly go back and look at. That's where we'll have to dig even more data to say what kind of runs. Another aspect of what we're doing is we're matching up the billing data for runs at Story County Medical in a generic term with the runs themselves to see what level of care was needed on it. Part of the problem might be is that we're dispatching an ambulance with two paramedics out to somebody who's fallen and scraped their knee. Maybe we can educate the public to drive yourself to the emergency room. What really constitutes what you need for an emergency response?
Right.
So that's some of the work we're doing. It has taken a lot of time and a lot of effort just to get this part done. It's going to be a slow process because there's no additional resources that have been dedicated to it. But by developing this template on looking at our data, I think overall we'll come up with more informed decisions on how we might proceed with our emergency medical response system. Under preparedness, I participated in a National Guard exercise, providing them the emergency manager's perspective on it so that hopefully in the future, if we need to use National Guard, we'll be better able to integrate them into our overall efforts. Meanwhile, the deputy also participated in training on large-scale events at universities, of which we have one. So hopefully this will, again, help us to better integrate our resources. And also, I conducted some training with our Story County, Iowa alerts down with the Slater and Kelly City clerks. They came across a situation where this would have been a good, useful system, but they didn't have the training on how to use the system. So this motivated them to not only get the training, but also to get their citizens signed up for it. I encourage all of our jurisdictions across Story County to get trained on how to use the system so that they'll be able to use it, especially if it's a rapid response that they need to use the information for.
operationally, we did secure a grant to upgrade our AOC. We put out the bids, and we got back some very good proposals on them. One of them had a very unique aspect to it, which is a mobile video teleconferencing system. The benefit for Story County here is it's going to be downstairs. When it's not being used by our agency, it will be available for use throughout the Story County Admin Building. The other thing that we've been working on is our backup EOC. On your consent agenda is an MOU for us to be able to utilize the facilities on the top floor of the Human Services Building. And I would appreciate your support on that as we will continue to work towards that. Another issue is the auditor's office essentially gave us some excess computers, which we have modified. Those will be our backup computers stored over in that facility so that if something should happen and this facility not be usable, we'll be able to rapidly reestablish command and control over there. So looking ahead, we have one more of our annexes to work on. It's the transportation annex. And this time we've got a little bit more time to spend on it. We're going to look at how we're going to internally prioritize our responses to open up our transportation hubs during a disaster, and also how we can better utilize external resources to facilitate getting response resources to where they need to go. We've revived Spring Fury, which is a preparedness fair, you could call it. It's going to be out at the City Church on Oak Road on the 30th of April between 10 and 2. Welcome your attendance at that and your support for it. And you should know this is Severe Weather Awareness Week. And speaking of severe weather awareness, the tornado drill that was scheduled for Wednesday has been pushed to Thursday due to the possibility of severe weather down in southern Iowa. I hope all of our agencies within Story County are reviewing their plans, and I hope they participate in the during the tornado drill as if it was a real event. With that, I open it up to any questions you might have.
No, just a comment. I certainly wanted to thank you and all of the emergency management coordinators around the state at the ISAC Spring School, the joint session that we had, again, an opportunity for a lot of new supervisors and supervisors that have been here for a number of years to fully understand the challenges that emergency management has, and particularly in some of the smaller counties and things of this nature, and the relationship between the Board of Supervisors and emergency management, I thought was extremely well done. And as I was sitting listening to that presentation, I was just sitting there being so appreciative and thankful of the relationship and the way that we work here in Story County with you and the various communities and so forth. And I just want to thank you for your outstanding leadership, because now when you talk about all of these trainings and the different types of things that we're doing, we hope we never have to do it or use it, but we've seen too many cases in other communities when disasters do happen, and when you're well trained, we're going to be able to mitigate the response so quickly and probably have a recovery much faster. So I just wanted to give kudos to your leadership, and you're going to be one of those people that I'm surely going to miss after this year for all that you've done for Story County. So thank you.
Thank you, and also, again, the support from the board, the essential support that you provided, and especially the human resources, which is the thing I say that I need more often than not by the department heads and the elected officials, allowing us to train their folks to be your command and control across this county is absolutely essential. And we, the two of us in emergency management, could not provide sufficient command and control without that support.
Thank you.
Next is consideration of minutes from March 15th. Move approval.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Any additions or corrections? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That's been approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Consent agenda. Gentlemen, we need to add road closure 1650 and 1651.
Move approval with no changes.
Second.
A motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Obertuth.
Aye.
That takes us to public hearing items. Consideration of Resolution 1643 to enter into a purchase agreement for the sale of county property locally known as 104 South Hazel and authorize the signature upon the purchase agreement and all other necessary documentation to effectuate the sale by the Chairman of the Board of Supervisors, Ethan Anderson, and Deb Shilroth.
I see Deb.
I think I'm so low.
Okay.
And I also want to note we have Bill Dodds here. He's the Executive Director and CEO of Optima Life Services as well. So if there are any questions or...
Just so everybody knows, we're talking about the administration building, formerly known as the COP building,
yes,
at Lincoln Way and Hazel and Ames.
Okay. Trying to get a visual here. So it's this number two building right here. This is Lincoln Way, so...
Drop that light just there, a little bit there, if you don't mind, Shelly. Thank you.
Okay. Optima has expressed interest in this building. We had it appraised, and that appraisal has been completed. The value has been listed at $900,000. We shared the appraisal with the board, the county attorney's office, Optima, and their legal counsel. And so the purchase price has been identified as the appraisal value of $900,000. And this document before you outlines the terms of the purchase agreement, including the purchase price. And today's action, if it is approved, would allow us then to take the necessary steps of another survey of the property, as well as rezoning it as we prepare to sell the building. And we have our eye on this all being completed by June 30th, if all the I's can be dotted and T's crossed.
One note, and I don't know if Deb said this while I was out, is that we will be reconfiguring the property. Right now, the property line runs right in the middle of the parking lot, and we will be shifting that property line to the south, where the entire parking lot will go with the CLP property.
Right.
And so there will
be... That's that blue line that's running east and west. That will be dropped to the south.
Yeah.
Give more parking.
Okay.
No, primarily, and I want to thank, I know Paul Ulrich, and I know Deb, that's had some ongoing communication. And Deb, thank you for your leadership in this area and working with Bill and so forth through this process. I think, based on what information that I have received here recently, I really think that this is has been well thought out, and Ethan, I mean, our legal counsel seems to not have any, major issues and so forth. I would just like to say to our chair that if Bill has any comments or not wanted to comment at all, we'll certainly give him the opportunity to do so. And I will say that Bill, Jane Halliburton told me to tell you hello. And I did tell her about the potential for us to enter into an agreement and so forth. So she said she still speaks highly of you.
I would ask Bill Doss to come up. If he has anything he'd like to say, this will be his opportunity, and then we'll open a public hearing.
Well, Bill's making his way up here. I do want to stress for the record that the property for sale is just 104 South Hazel. That's the former administration building. The group home that is to the south is not part of this sale.
And that's why we have to do the resurvey, because the parcel that the group home was on included the majority of the parking lot for the admin building, so we're going to move that property line down, and we'll separate the group home from that parcel.
I don't have a lot to say, which is fairly unusual for me, but I would say we've really enjoyed the year or so that we've been working with you folks here in Story County. I think the transition is pretty well completed, and I think we're quite satisfied with the way things have turned out, we've opened a number of sites in addition to taking over the existing services. So this is the next step in the plan, and we're all in for it. We're thinking that this will be a good facility for us, and we can make a great use out of it. So appreciate the opportunity to take it over.
And with that, I'll open the public hearing. If anybody has any comments to make about the proposed sale of this property, this would be the time to come forward. In a huge rush to the microphone, I'll turn to the board.
I think this is the right thing to do. I will reciprocate what Bill just said. From Story County's point of view, we really appreciate Optima coming in and providing those services as Story County transitioned, as we were required to do with the regionalization. It was always my hope that it would work out that this building could move back into the public domain with its highest and best use. I believe this is it. I think the independent appraisal that we had done represents a fair market value. I think Optima recognized that by no real negotiation. I mean, it's just this is what the appraisal said. This is what the cost is going to be. And so for that reason, I would move approval of Resolution 1643 to enter into the purchase agreement and endow our chair with the authority to do whatever is necessary to go ahead and conclude the sale.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anything further?
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
That resolution's been approved.
Bill, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill.
See you soon.
Additional items. Discussion and or direction on a consideration of upgrading 303rd Lane near Cambridge from a level B road to a level A road. Terry Fett, Manager of Engineering Department of Central Iowa Power Cooperative, partnering with Consumers Energy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Thanks for letting us come talk this morning. I'm Terry Fett with Central Iowa Power, and with me is Duke Dushek, also with CIPCO, and then Jim Kadenbach with Consumers Energy. What we wanted to talk about is Consumers and CIPCO are building a joint electrical substation on 303rd Lane near the city of Cambridge. And the 303rd Lane leading up to there is a level B county road. And we've started construction, and we're having some concerns with soft ground and access to the site. And, you know, we're concerned about it for a couple reasons. One is just the safety aspect. If we have personnel on site and the road's impassable, it's hard to get emergency services out there. And then secondary, just logistical, getting vehicles in and out to construct the site and maintain the site. And so what we wanted to do was discuss with the council what it would take to upgrade the road. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been working with Darren Moon and the Secondary Roads Department to discuss some of the options, and we were directed to come to the council to discuss what those options are.
Well, I'll start off, and I'll just be pretty frank. I can't fathom anybody buying property for and to spend hundreds and thousands, if not millions of dollars on a facility that's on an unimproved county railroad and not enter into any kind of discussion with the county before the purchase of that property, or even seeing what the possibility was that road could be improved. The county currently has an ordinance in place that prohibits us from improving that road and from allowing private individuals to improve that road. And so at this point, this is kind of backwards. This is a discussion that I think should have been held before the property was ever purchased and the decision was made to put a substation there. And for everybody's information, this is also the location of this proposed pumping station for the pipeline that's going to come through. So that's where I'm at. I don't know how else to explain it to you, and I'm not trying to irritate anybody this morning, but that's the fact of the matter. It's you purchased property on a level B road and decided to build your structure there, and now you come to the county and say, we want that road taken to a level A road.
Well, my question is, are they asking the county to take it to a level A, or are they proposing to do all the maintenance and upgrade and so forth. And then the second part of the question would be, is under the existing ordinance, would that be approved? I mean, would it? I don't know if our existing ordinance allows for that a private entity to be able to do that. So it becomes more of a legal issue in terms of how do you amend an ordinance or how do you allow for something like this? How do you work with the other homeowners or properties that utilize that road in such a way that it would not be a hindrance to the general public? And this may be more of a question for you know, our county engineer and legal counsel from that standpoint, but I certainly do not believe that it's in the purview of the county that we should spend tax dollars to upgrade this road based on the fact that an entity has, you know, decided to build its power station and so forth without having any consultations with the county, as Paul alluded to. My question, and I'm trying to equate this, Darren, and for you guys, similar to the wind towers. I see it a little bit different in that regard, but because the wind towers had access roads off, not necessarily a main road that was already, you know, there that we're talking about. So we're now talking about a classification from a level B to a level A. So there's a lot of questions that I'm not as educated about of what that process is. But I do think when we are faced with a situation or a request, there needs to be some due diligence in looking at what is the feasibility, what are the possibilities, how can we accommodate a situation. And Paul, I'll just use this as a preface. Lincoln Way Energy, for example, you know, when they decided to locate where they located, we were really not involved in that earlier discussion. That was pretty much negotiations with the city of Nevada and so forth. But I don't think that there was ever an indication for us that we had to maintain, you know, that area and so forth. So that's kind of where I'm coming from, is I don't have enough information to be able to give a clear, definitive concept one way or the other at this time. And this might be something that has to be remanded back to legal counsel and working with our engineer and so forth. I'm not real sure where we are in that process. So,
well, I can tell you that the difference between this and the wind turbines was that they built access roads to those turbines on private property.
Right.
And okay. That was up to between that company and the landowner.
Right.
And any damage that would have been done to those gravel roads in the process, I believe the company paid for the gravel, and I understand that SIPCO has agreed to reimburse us for some gravel that was put on 570th in order to get to that level B road. But the item that's before us is to consider taking the current level B road to level A.
And as I'd like to clarify also that our intention was that we would fund the upgrade for 300 Third Lane to a level A status.
Well, it makes the most sense to me if you guys are willing to fund it, that for me, that the county look at maybe abandoning that portion of the road. I'm sure that road was dead ended when the interstate was put in,
mm-hmm.
And there's no houses on that road. It's agricultural land on both sides. There's field accesses, as I see it. There's four property owners. Darren, you help me if I'm missing this. There's four property owners, including the pipeline, the power company, and then two
agricultural landowners that both, well, at least one of them needs access to their fields or currently uses this road for access to their fields. And so, Paul, I think what you're suggesting makes the most sense to me. I had a conversation last week with a representative from the pipeline company that he indicated that they would have real interest in us abandoning this stretch of road, which would in essence turn it into a driveway, and then it's maintained however you guys all agree. I think there's some logistical issues with us abandoning the road. I'm worried more about the timing than anything else. So, Darren, as I understand it, we can't allow private gravel to go on to a level B road according to our ordinance. So that means we would have to abandon it either before or as they make the improvements to it. I don't know what kind of timing it takes for us to abandon a stretch like this. I would say at a minimum, we need to get the four property owners, the two private landowners, you guys, and the pipeline company all together to sit down and make sure that everybody's in agreement that this can work, and then we move as rapidly as we can toward abandoning, which I think allows you guys to accomplish your goal. I'm just seeing a pinch in the timing. If it's as wet as I think it's going to be here for the next month or so, I don't know what we do to alleviate that. I don't know if there's anything we have that we can do.
I need to ask the question. I don't know how your ordinance reads or is written. Is it possible that at our expense, the county could place approved material on the road? What before, well, you know, while we're working toward this end?
Yeah.
Just to keep it more passable.
I think there's not a clear mechanism for us to do that, but what I would suggest is if it's our intention to move down the road of abandoning this stretch, recognizing that it is so the landowners can maintain it as they see fit, we see if there's any wiggle room at all, Darren, for us to start to allow some work to get done while we're in front. Maybe there's not, but that's a conversation I think for you and Ethan and maybe Deb to have to see if there's any opportunity at all for us, if it's our intention to move this into private hands, to allow those private owners to go ahead and do the absolute minimum that needs to be done so that they can continue work. And there, maybe you're going to find that there's not a mechanism and then we're just caught and we've got to move as rapidly as we can. But let's see if we can find a way to still adhere to what our ordinance says, but allow this to happen knowing that it's going to roll out of the public domain. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense to me. Again, like I say, this is a new territory for us.
Yeah.
We've not had to deal with this before.
Well, in any case, I would suggest that we need to move as rapidly as possible. I'm sure there's a series of things we have to do anytime we abandon property. We need to move as rapidly as possible to get that clock ticking so that this board can make an ultimate decision if, in fact, we're going to abandon it. And I would suggest that it starts with pulling representatives of each of the landowners together just to have the conversation. These are the ones that are truly being impacted, not including some of the kids in Story County who like to find some of these dead end roads occasionally. I just assume that not be our problem anyway.
Right. Does it require a public hearing to abandon? It does. Okay, and so we'll have to meet the publication timeline. Okay. So that's my suggestion, is that you guys work with the engineer. And he'll make contact with the other two private landowners and see where they're at, and we'll move forward from there. For me, the process is just backwards, and I can completely understand the work that you guys are doing down there, and we'll move as quickly as we can to get a result so you guys can do what you need to do.
We appreciate that.
You betcha.
Thank you.
Yep. Next is consideration of Resolution 1644, setting a date for a public hearing on April 5th, 2016, to refund general obligation bonds.
Again, just to note now, this is refinancing existing bonds. It's going to save us, Paul, what did we figure? $80,000 or $90,000. It's going to save people in Story County $80,000 or $90,000 by doing it this way. And I will move approval of Resolution 1644.
Second. Got a motion and a second to approve Resolution 1644. Is there anything further?
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Tooth.
Aye.
That's been approved.
Looks like we have public forum number two, comments from the public. On items not on the agenda, the board may not take any actions on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. That seems moving towards the mic. Liaison assignments to committee meetings. Wayne.
No liaison assignment to report.
Rick. Pass. Announcements from the supervisor. Wayne.
Tomorrow is the housing conference that I will be attending at, I believe it's at Sheeman. Thursday, Darren, we have a CERPA joint meeting. I just have to be on a conference call at 11, but I can either do that. I don't know if we want to joint ride together, because I can probably do that. We're in the car, we're on the way back. I do have another meeting with Boys and Girls Club at 1 at 12:30, and then the Regional Governance Board is at 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to be back.
Busiest man in show business, Mark. Good
day. And then tonight is the MPO meeting that I'm going to go to. Starts at 6, so as soon as it's over, I'll head over to the Drainage District meeting.
Yeah, and we got another Drainage District meeting, I think, at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go Cyclones.
Amen.
I'll agree with that. If I don't have any announcements, I'll take a motion for adjournment.
Move adjournment.
Second. Motion to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Adjourned.